You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
For every time we make a mistake and decide to start again, we light this chalice. For every time we are lonely and we let someone be our friend, we light this chalice. For every time we are disappointed and we choose to hope, we light this chalice. These words by Reverend Maureen Killoran, who has served in many of the United States of America. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it means to serve you. And this is worship from worthship because it serves you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Aaron Pose, a member of this congregation, and I'm leading this service today. I welcome you here on behalf of the generations of Unitarians who have been worshipping in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you to see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. We welcome you to join with us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation, and cheesecake.
Before I start, I just want to welcome Robin Filmer to our community today. Robin has kindly agreed to take the third Sunday of every month and playing the piano for us, so I think it's fantastic. Yeah, so welcome, Robin, and thank you. The story for all ages is really aimed at adults today, not children. And we're looking at the Mullah Nasradam character. Now, the Mullah or Hodja or Hokka are titles for various areas of the world that in early times were used to signify a learned man. So it may not be necessarily one character, but several characters. The character Mullah Hodja Hokka Nasruddin is sometimes wise, sometimes foolish, and sometimes both. He is a unique spin on a wise sage or a philosopher character. Much of Nasruddin's actions can be described as illogical yet logical, rational yet irrational, bizarre yet normal, and simple yet profound. What adds even further to his uniqueness is the way he gets across his messages in unconventional yet very effective methods. Mullah Nasruddin tales have been passed down for many centuries. It is thought that the Mullah Nasruddin character is based on a real man who lived in the 1300s. So I guess there's some parallels here with Jesus, the story of Jesus. How many countries claim to be the origin of the actual Mullah Nasruddin character in his tales remains uncertain because there are so many countries that do claim. But when you consider the length of the Mughal Empire, in that period of time, a huge area of the earth was covered. Anyway, to the stories, three short ones. The first one is called Two in One, and I think it's apt for the stage that we're in our society at the moment with the elections coming up next Saturday. Nasruddin was taking a shortcut home through the cemetery where a burial was in progress. As he walked past the group of mourners, he overheard one of them saying, "Today is a sad day for us all. We have buried an honest man and a politician. A sad day indeed, Naz wrote and thought to himself. I didn't realise that the situation was so dire that they are now compelled to bury two people in the same grave. Running for mayor, Mullen Naz Ruddin put himself in the race for the hotly contested post of town mayor. After making a rousing speech at a rally, he asked the crowd if they had any questions. I have a question for you, sir, said a man. Do you drink alcohol? That depends, replied the mullah, on whether my answer leads to disqualification or an invitation. On the day of the election, Naz Ruddin was bitterly disappointed to learn that his opponent had won by a small margin. And the last one is perhaps a little bit more personal in a way. I have now acquired hearing aids. I started using them on Friday, so this one is called Falling on Deaf Ears. Naz Ruddin was at tea house one afternoon when Arif, the hakim, walked in. How are you, Mullah? I hope you and your family are well, Arif asked politely. I'm fine, thanks, Arif, but I am worried about my wife, who seems to have become very hard of hearing. Is there any cure for her problem? Asked Naz Ruddin. Well, some degree of age-related hearing loss is normal, Arif said. If you bring your wife to my dispensary, I can check her hearing and prescribe the necessary treatment. But before you do that, you can try this simple test. When you go home this evening, call out to your wife from the gate and see if she hears you. If not, then try speaking to her from the front door. And keep reducing the distance until she responds. This way, you'll be able to gauge how serious her hearing deficiency is. Naz Ruddin thanked the doctor for the free medical advice and headed home. Calling out to Fatima from the gate in the front yard, Naz Ruddin said loudly, I am home, dear. What are we having for dinner? Getting no reply, Naz Ruddin opened the front door and yelled, I'm home, dear. What are we having for dinner? Still getting no response, Naz Ruddin pushed open the kitchen door and repeated loudly, What's for dinner, dear? Fatima, who was stirring a large pot on the stove, turned to face her husband. Are you deaf, Naz Ruddin? She said angrily, wiping her hands on an apron. For the third and last time, I repeat, we're having fish stew and pilaf, followed by apricot halva for dessert.
It is our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and to bind that fellowship and covenant with one another by sharing with us any recent event that has been significant in your spiritual life, and mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice, in this case here, and telling us as briefly as possible about it. As some things lie too deep for words, you're also very welcome to light a candle in silence. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening this circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. Just let me light the candle first. This final candle represents all those things we choose not to share, that remain silent in our hearts. May all the things that we've shared here today be honoured by this beloved community. And we'll be doing our first hymn for today. Thank you.
Today's meditation was inspired by by Jack Kornfield, the American Buddhist, on equanimity. It's a wonderful quality, the spaciousness and balance of heart, but it's not something we aim for 100% of the time. If you're being chased by a rabid dog, it's not the time to cultivate equanimity. Our goal, though, is to train our minds to be less reactive and attached to situations so that we can act sensibly and not senselessly. Equanimity is not indifference. Equanimity is about opening our hearts, while indifference is about closing the heart. We can feel the possibility of balance in our hearts in the midst of life when we recognize that our life is not in our control. So get yourself into a comfortable position, paying soft attention to your breath and body until you find quiet. Begin by reflecting on the benefits of a mind that is peaceful and has balance and equanimity. Sense what a gift it is to bring a peaceful heart to this world. Let yourself feel an inner sense of balance and ease. May I be balanced and at peace. May my heart be at rest and balanced in the midst of all things. All created things arise and pass away. Joys, sorrows, pleasures, events, people, buildings, animals, nations, whole civilizations. Let yourself rest at peace amidst a changing world. May I learn to see the arising and changing of all nature with equanimity and balance. May I be open, balanced, and peaceful. We are all heirs to the consequences of our own deeds and the conditions created by them. May I bring compassion and equanimity to the events of the world. May I find peace. The happiness and suffering of others depends more upon their actions than on our wishes for them. May I rest in equanimity and the great natural balance of heart. May I be compassionate, not indifferent. May I be peaceful and reactive only when a situation demands it.
Now I realise what lies ahead can be sensitive for some of us. Our egos could easily become involved. Some of us are very invested into our ideas of how intelligent or stupid we or others are. I ask for just this service: you pop those feelings, that ego, on your shoulder so it can watch, but leave you to listen unfettered. You can always interfere later, and it will. Unitarianism is well known for being relatively low in judgmental discrimination. But there are always exceptions, aren't there? A few things crop up when you look under the carpet, and compatriots in my original UU church gazed hard under that carpet. One of the things Unitarianism discriminates on is intelligence and education. Not the same thing, of course, but I lump these cousins in together for a reason. This church, and indeed most Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist churches, are weighted heavily in those who are well-educated and intelligent. Many have degrees and qualifications of varying kinds, and this particular church just swims in teachers. Hands up those here who are or have been teachers. Look at that. Thank you. This doesn't even include those who have taken on a teaching role. I was once a tutor, for example. And of course, parenting involves an awful lot of teaching, whether you like it or not. During my university studies, I observed a kind of illness spread. It seemed to afflict people with a background in private school more, yet no one was immune. Anecdotally, this disease got hold of around a third of the students there. The disease was simple, and it goes like this. I am well educated, so I am worth more than you are. Now, as a young male, I was hardly free of the kind of arrogant hubris that leads down this path. I also wasn't free of the anger that my intelligence had been suppressed from flowering when I was younger. University has its strengths, but it is, unfortunately, largely full of itself. What saved me is a simple perspective. There is an extensive library at my university. This is the University of Adelaide. It's still called the Barr Smith Library after the people who founded it. The picture that's on the screen is the original Barr Smith Library. The full library is behind it and a great deal bigger. The original library is still used as a sort of a side part. I was after a particular book and walking on one of the levels past the many rows of shelves. Each single shelf had many rows, and on each row were many books. Rows of shelves flitted past as I walked. It occurred to me as I passed the non-engineering section that I didn't know anything at all of what was in this book, what was in that book there either. Indeed, I likely knew nothing or next to nothing of anything of the entire row, the entire shelf, the entire row of shelves here. Row upon row flitting past as I walked, packed full of excellent information and knowledge. Yet what did I, arrogant student, actually know? The Barr Smith was an extensive library in this state, and there were three or so floors and some extra bits hanging off on sides, including the original Barr Smith Library. I didn't know too much now, did I? Practically nothing. And the Barr Smith was only one library. There were many more. And even the best of all libraries combined, we could even throw in Alexandrina there, only held a small slice of the totality of information and knowledge. A humbling moment for this intellectual. I believe it is from this that I dumped the "I'm better than you" attitude, and a good thing too. I later found a rather mangled quote that summed up my experience quite well. The ancient oracle said that I was the wisest of all the Greeks. It is because I alone, of all the Greeks, know that I know nothing. Attributed to Socrates. The actual words and meaning are actually more complex, and of course not in English. Still, the quote serves. I used to believe anyone could be intelligent, but it is not so. Most can be more intelligent, and most can also be educated far beyond what they fear are their limits. But some people really are not that smart, and some never will be. This is rarely said out loud, but almost everyone knows it. A huge number of people are sensitive to how they themselves or others perceive their intelligence or their stupidity. But we need to break from this emotional investment in our and others' intelligence and stupidity. Few of us are outliers, being so much greatly more stupid or intelligent than everyone else. So pointing fingers is very unwise. We need to learn not to worship the intelligent as a god, particularly when it's ourselves. And we need to stop belittling those who just don't have what we do. The same can be said for strength, speed, and other human qualities, even kindness. Yet we cling on to feelings of superiority and inferiority, and that is doing us all harm and injustice.
Letters After My Name by Kari Kopnik. I pull another basket of steaming dishes out of the dishwasher in our church basement. My partner in kitchen cleanup grabs a clean dish towel to dab the pools of water from the upturned soup bowls. They ask, "So what's your undergrad in?" The conversations that happen in church kitchens are my absolute favorites. I've been washing dishes in church basements since I was 11. Kitchen ministry fills my heart, but not this time. Not this conversation. I know the look I'll get. I know they won't mean harm, but I can feel the shame creep from my heart to my face. I'm staff here. They pay me a chunk from their operating budget to direct the ministry to and with their children and teens. Surely I have a degree, preferably a master's degree. Likely even a professional license of some kind too. Actually, I don't. I didn't finish my undergrad. I turned to load the next round of soup bowls, and while I want to say, I was close to a degree in child psychology, if I move back to that state, I'll finish up. But I just spray the bowls with the restaurant-style sprayer. Bits of barley and carrots fly everywhere. The conversation stops. My eyes don't linger to see the raised eyebrows, the quick flash of judgment. It's not that I didn't want to finish school. I just came from a working class family where college visits and choosing the right school were a foreign world. My high school teachers didn't see anything special in me. My brain functions more like a modern dance number done in the woods, upside down, than a neat and tidy ballet performance of Swan Lake. So I tumbled out of high school and headed where my friends went, to a big public research institution that was all about third position with absolutely no woods. It's not surprising I left early, feeling stupid. I worked in what could have been the Miss Magazine top 10 low-wage jobs for women until my Unitarian Universalist congregation needed a religious educator and I applied. We were widely successful, doubling the number of registered children and then doubling again. We won an award for growth and innovation and finally had to buy a church building to house our booming congregation. I served on district and continental boards for my professional association, and my blog was often featured in the denominational magazine. But I never applied to be formally credentialed. How could I? I would have to face the credentialing committee without any letters after my name. My faith says all are welcome. My faith says we are all whole and holy and good. I myself have said this dozens of times to children and teens, and yet we have miles to go to make this so.
To get to a better place, one must realize intelligence is oversimplified. Some are intelligent in terms of speed. They can sift through the information and find the gem more quickly than others. Some are thorough. When they sift, they will not miss the gems that are hidden within. Some are broadly intelligent. They can think in multiple threads or even modes at once, or find things that are beyond their own interests. There's emotional intelligence too. This is a weak point of mine, but was my partner Beau's strongest point. There are other flavours well beyond emotional as well, such as spiritual or social. Understanding intelligence is not any more one homogeneous thing than love is one homogeneous thing, helps one to understand that stupidity is also just as variable. A considerable part of what one calls intelligence is really perception instead, sometimes called insight. It's little more than how well you take your raw sensory data from your five or so senses and notice things within it. I'm highly perceptive in communication, not because I'm a public relations genius, but because I must be. With my hearing sense less functional than most, I use perception to correct for it so that I can communicate at all. I notice your facial movements, your body, your context and tone. I gather all this information and very quickly put it together to find out what you're trying to express. This helps me to truly listen. Listening is perception. Hearing is just sound stimulus. We also need to understand the separation between intelligence and education. Education I put as the acquisition of data, information and knowledge, particularly systemically. Intelligence I put as the usage of information and knowledge. At that level, and it is by no means the only way of understanding this, education is input and intelligence is output. Both have multiple modes and lines of what these signs mean are rather blurred by a colloquial usage, which can vary considerably. Data is raw observation. Information, or in other words, one extra step of processing, is organized data. And an extra step of processing, knowledge, is refined information. And this chart sort of summarizes the differences between them. This is also a perception, not a strict truth. Data is pure. Knowledge is prone to error. So what I've attempted to do here is to separate out some of the beautiful variation, what we commonly lump together as intelligence, and how that may apply in wildly different ways to different people, to different degrees. I haven't even touched on a wide and complex array of skills, abilities, and modes. But why does it even matter? Who cares about stupid people? Who even cares about smart people? Well, we come back to our first principle, don't we? The inherent worth and dignity of every person. It doesn't matter how smart or stupid you are. It doesn't matter how smart or stupid you think you are either. You are inherently worth something. It also ties in with the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part, because intelligence and stupidity is part of the interdependent web of all existence. It took me a while to find a cute spider. The wide eyes really help. After all, a spider is not that intelligent and is certainly not educated. And yet, there is purpose and value there. There's also the rebuke that for all our trips to the moon and subatomic particle physics, we're doing more poorly at ecological management than Incy Wincy is. Who's superior then? But there's something even more straightforward about this. When stupid people get cut off from good information and sources of support and acceptance, they turn to listen to those that are still engaging with them. People like Trump, Putin, anti-vaxxers and conspiracy theorists. Is it so smart that we enable that? There is a time for seriousness and a time to be silly. We can see and hear, we touch and taste and smell. Yet we miss all but a sliver of meaning from our sensory experience. We strive to be significant and greater than all. In doing so, we can drag ourselves low. The stupid in its many forms and ways, hidden, obvious, is with us. How can we perceive wisdom without stupidity for contrast? How can we learn without knowing we were once stupid in this learning? How can we strive to learn more without knowing our stupidity is now? The stupidity is with us all, as is intelligence, wisdom, and education. For they are part of the binary and our rich human experience.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.
Thank you so much, Robin.